Anybody mind if I talk about Abraham some more? One of the things that comes out as you read about people God has put in the scriptures, their story, their accounts, is their humanity. God has not written the Bible so as to gloss over the weaknesses and the humanity of people he writes about, no matter how much regard he may want us to have for them and how much good he might show us about them. He also shows us, as we sometimes say, the warts. And even Abraham has a few. Not many, not horrible, but he's got a few. And it helps me to know that as well. Abraham is called the friend of God. Now, he's not called that in Genesis, any of the texts we read this morning, but later on he's referred to as that. When Isaiah writes an encouraging word to Israel, God says through Isaiah to Israel, "You are my people, the descendants of my friend, Abraham." Isn't that interesting that God would say that of an individual man? That's in chapter 41 of Isaiah, by the way, if you want to check that out later. But James also brings that out in James chapter 2. He quotes something we read this morning as far as Abraham's faith in God and how it was credited to him as righteousness. And then he adds that he was called the friend of God because he believed in God. So while that's something that's fairly unique of Abraham in Scripture, God calls him his friend, even though Abraham's got some issues, minor though they may be. And I want to call your attention to where we started this morning. It's kind of started in Genesis chapter 11. It says, Terah, who was Abram's father, this is chapter 11, verse 26. Terah lived 70 years, became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran became the father of Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his birth in Ur of the Chaldees. Abraham and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Sarai was barren. She had no child. Terah took Abram his son and Lot the son of Haran his grandson and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife. And they went out together from Ur of the Chaldees in order to enter the land of Canaan. They went as far as Haran and settled there. Just a matter of fact, accounting of who Abram was, his father, his brothers, his wife. There's no commentary here about his character. You remember when God told us about Noah in Genesis chapter 6, he said Noah was a righteous man. And then later on talks about his faithfulness in preaching. But there's nothing like that said at this point about Abram. Just know who he is. And God calls him in chapter 12. So he's not being called, as far as we know, on the basis of any outstanding characteristic that God has put in the Word. But we know he's a man of faith. He'll later be called the man of God. And so we take that for at face value. Then in chapter 12, right after God calls him, this is what we read about Abram. Chapter 12, verse 10. There was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, "See now, I know that you're a beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife.' They will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister so that it may go well with me because of you and that I may live on account of you." What's Abram doing? Couple of things. He's not applying, and I'm saying this in all fairness. We're looking back at what's already transpired. Abram didn't have that benefit. But we're looking at Abram from this day and age and with all the history that's passed that we're privy to. And we might say, well, God had promised him that he was going to make of him a great nation. Bless those who blessed him. Curse those who cursed him. So why would Abram go into Egypt and be afraid? Why didn't he have courage and confidence? I guess because he's a human being. That's my best guess. What about you? And so he says to Sarai, these guys will kill me if they think you're my wife because you're so beautiful, they'll want to take you, and so they'll kill me to do that. What's he doing there? Well, he's presupposing, judging the character of the people of Egypt. He doesn't know that about them. Now, they could do that, but that's not what they did. They do, in fact, see Sarai. By the way, she is his half-sister, right? So, and that was okay back then. We would kind of look funny at people who do that today, marry their half-sister, but that was okay back then. It was a different day and age, different circumstance physically and biologically. But she is his half-sister, so it's not a total lie. It's only half a lie. Half a lie is okay, right? So this is what happens. Verse 14, it came about when Abram came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Therefore, he treated Abram well for her sake and gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants and female donkeys and camels. So Pharaoh was enamored with Sarai, and instead of killing Abram and just taking her to himself, he throws a bunch of wealth at Abram. Look what he gives him. Sheep, oxen, donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys and camels. I don't know what Abram had when he went down into Egypt, but he's rich now. Verse 17. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Then Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say, 'She is my sister,' so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here's your wife. Take her and go." So once again, Pharaoh, obviously irritated at what's going on, doesn't kill Abram, doesn't lash out at him. He just says, what's a big deal? Why'd you do this? And it shows us also that Pharaoh has some sense of conviction about what marriage is and how it's to be honored, which at this point, we always think of the Egyptians as heathen pagans who know nothing about God, but I'm not sure that that's true. Remember, we're not that far from the flood. When Abram was born, it was about 290, 300 years or so from the flood, and so we're also talking about not that long a time from Babylon, and by the time he's here at this age, it's been 375 or so years, something like that. People knew about God. They knew about what was right in the sight of God. And Pharaoh knew that, apparently. So he honors Abram and honors Sarai as Abram's wife. And Pharaoh commands his men, verse 20, concerning him, and they escorted him away with his wife and all that belonged to him. He didn't take that stuff back. He escorted him away. So, see, here's what's interesting to me. Abram doesn't have the conviction, the courage, the confidence to say, "God will take care of me. I'm just going to tell the complete truth about this woman." He misjudges the Egyptians. He misleads Pharaoh, and he allows his wife to be taken into Pharaoh's home. Anything could have happened. And yet, what does God do but bless Abram through Pharaoh? This is providential blessing. Abram is now being enriched, not because he deserves it through his weakness, we might say, but simply because God wants to elevate Abram to a place where he's going to be able to support the family that he's going to have and have a name that he's going to have. God is blessing him in a way in spite of himself. God ever blessed you in spite of yourself? All right. Maybe that's what's going on here. Another time things happen is in chapter 15. We talked about this briefly this morning. We'll talk about it briefly tonight. I don't know that there's that much to it, but it's here. It says in verse 15 of Genesis, "After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, 'Do not fear, Abram, I'm a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great.' What's God say? I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be great. He's projecting Abram's success into the future and his blessing. Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless and the heir of my house is Eleazar of Damascus? I'm not sure if we're not hearing a little bit of a complaint on the part of Abram. He's been promised a son. He hasn't gotten that son yet. It's almost like he's saying, what's up here? How come this blessing you promised has not yet been fulfilled? I don't know if that's what's in his mind or not. But God tells him, Abram further says, verse 3, since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir. He may simply be just asking, but it seems to me like there may be a little bit more than that. And then behold, the word of the Lord came to him saying, this man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body. He shall be your heir. So I just wonder if he is enough like me that he's saying, all right, you've made this promise. What's going on? Where are we right now with regard to that promise? You make of this what you will, but he's asking God about this situation. Then we go on to chapter 16. Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. They've got the promise. They've been reassured of the promise, but she's borne him no children. She had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I will obtain children through her. Talked about this briefly this morning. What should Abram have said at this point? No, darling, no, sweetheart. This is not God's plan. God said he's going to give us a child, you and me. That's what God had told him. What Sarah is coming up with is not the plan. For me as a husband, I read this and I think I need to be ready to take the lead in my own home when there's any sense of a departure from the plan that God has set before us. Lead your family is what I'm seeing here, what I'm reading. Stick with the plan, whatever it is that God has given. There may be an alternative presented, another choice besides that, but do not fall for it. Stay with it. Do you remember what happened in the garden? And I'm not trying to blame anything on women here. I'm just saying that in the garden, the serpent approached Eve, deceived Eve. And when Paul makes commentary about this later on in the New Testament, he said that Eve was deceived, but Adam was not deceived. And yet Adam ate the fruit. Perhaps because his wife had already done it, whatever the reason was, she ate first and he ate. God's plan is for men to lead. That's what we're supposed to do, guys. Lead in the home. Lead in the church. Be examples. Set the standard. Follow the standard. Stick with it. In this case, I'm not trying to pick on Abram, but I see this as a failure on his part. Now, how many of you saw the way this was depicted in The Chosen? This was included, and they made it look like Abram kind of, whoa, Hagar. Who knows what happened? But when it was over, you know how it went down. It said, verse 3, Sarai took Hagar the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband Abram as his wife. Her idea, she's giving her to Abram. He went into Hagar and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarah said to Abram, may the wrong done me be upon you. How many husbands can relate? Wait a minute, this wasn't my idea. No, it wasn't his idea. It was her idea, but it was a bad idea. He should have said, this is a bad idea. He failed to lead, and it's like now he's reaping the rewards, reaping the harvest of not leading in the way that the Lord had told him they should go. So, another situation where things didn't turn out exactly as they should have. Abraham was a friend of God. Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Abraham is a man of faith, so much a man of faith and so revered. When you read through the New Testament, you'll find Abram mentioned 73 times. So, he's important in God's plan, but his life is kind of messy. But it only gets messy when he doesn't stick with the plan. Chapter 17. Oop, wait a minute. That's a mark from this morning. You don't want me to preach this morning's lesson tonight, do you? All right. One more. And this one to me, it's the same kind of thing when he went down to Egypt. This is in Gerar. This is chapter 20. Abram journeyed from there toward the land of the Negev and settled between Kadesh and Shur. And then he stopped or sojourned in Gerar. You'll have to get your GPS out and find out where all those places are. But suffice it to say, people who read this at the time knew where these places were. That's another thing about the Bible. It gives you definite locations. God could have just passed over and said he settled in a certain place and this happened. But he's very specific. Gives us names and places. Abram said of Sarah, his wife, "She's my sister." So Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Same thing he's doing here that he had done in Egypt. It's interesting to me that God did not come to Abram in the interim period and say, "All right, Abram, let's get something straight. You don't need to lie about who Sarah is. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to take care of you." God doesn't apparently do that. So when Abram gets in Gerar, he does the same thing he did in Egypt. He knows what happened with Pharaoh. He knows Pharaoh was upset because he found out and realized, man, this could have been a mess. I could have, well. But he does the same thing. You never do the same kind of wrong thing twice, do you? I know me, I'm smart enough. I only do the wrong things one time, and then I've learned my lesson, and I never do it again, right? I've got my tongue in my cheek, by the way. But God, it says in verse 3, came to Abimelech in a dream of the night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman you have taken, for she is married." Now Abimelech had not come near her. And he said, "Lord, will you slay a nation, even though blameless? Did he not say to me, 'She is my sister,' and she herself said, 'He is my brother'? In the integrity of my heart and in the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Now, understand what's going on. This is Abimelech, one who we might think would be a heathen pagan king. But God comes to him in a dream, and he and God are having this discussion in the dream about Abimelech's heart and his intentions and what he did know and what he did not know and how he did what he did in innocence. And God knows that, and he tells him that in the dream. God said to him in a dream, verse 6, "Yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you've done this, and I also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet." Did you know that about Abraham? God calls Abram his friend, also calls him a prophet. I don't typically think about Abram as a prophet, but he's a prophet. God says so. "Therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live." So he's not only serving as a prophet, what's he serving as now? He's serving as a priest. God says, "Abram will pray for you." No, wait a minute. Isn't Abram the reason Abimelech is in trouble right now? I'm pretty confident that we don't know the whole backstory. God didn't tell us what his history with Abimelech was. He didn't tell us what lessons Abimelech needed to learn. And so God allowed this whole situation to happen to him so that he might be able to have this dream and this exchange and a conversation and learn whatever he needs to learn. I think we ought to trust the providence of God to that. But suffice it to say, this is not what Abram should have done. I would think, he should have had the confidence, the courage, should have had the faith to say, she's my wife, and God will protect me in spite of all this. But that's not what he did. Verse 7. Now therefore, God says to Abimelech, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. Sounds pretty serious, doesn't it? So Abimelech arose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were greatly frightened. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us, and how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what have you encountered that you have done this thing? And then Abraham fesses up. Abraham said, because I thought, surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Was he right about that? Apparently not. Apparently there was fear of God in that place. Have you ever done that? I'm sure you haven't done that. You haven't misjudged somebody to think they're just a rotten scoundrel. They don't care anything about what God thinks or what God says. And then you find out later, oh, you're wrong. Anybody ever done that for you? Misjudged you? That's what Abraham has done. He's misjudged Abimelech. And he's fessing up to Abimelech. But Abimelech seems to be behaving as a man who does fear God and cares about what's right and wrong. Verse 12. Abraham seemed to be making an excuse. Besides, she's actually my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. In other words, what I told you was true, sort of. It came about that when God caused me to wander from my father's house, and I said to her, this is the kindness which you'll show to me everywhere we go, say of me, he's my brother. So this is a premeditated plan to lie. Because he is insecure about what will happen if people find out that Sarah is his wife. Verse 14. An interesting response on the part of Abimelech. Abimelech then took sheep and oxen and male and female servants and gave them to Abraham and restored his wife Sarah to him. Does that sound familiar? That's exactly what Pharaoh did. How is this happening? How is this man of God going in different places and lying about who Sarah is and being rewarded in the exchange? Here's what I get from this. When God sets you up for blessing, you're going to be blessed. I believe God, through all of this, knew that Abram was a man of faith. He wasn't doing everything just right. Do any of us do anything, get everything right? You're here. That tells me you have faith. That tells me you're trying. But every day we live our lives, we make mistakes. We do dumb things. We say dumb things. We think thoughts that we ought to just push out of our mind, but we entertain those thoughts and we keep them in there. And sometimes things come out of our mouths that shouldn't come out of our mouths. We are messes. And we are seeing that Abraham is not perfect. He's got his own issues. Granted, we've got all this history to look back on. Abraham didn't have all that history. He doesn't have a Bible, per se, to read, to study, to guide him. I don't know what he might have had. Oral history about Adam and Eve and the creation, the garden, sin, about the flood. I don't know what all Abram would have had, but he didn't have what we have. And all of the history that's recorded in the scripture we have now to encourage us and to teach us and to show us, to open up our eyes to the path of God. And Abraham did not have that. It's interesting, too, at one point, when God is promising Abraham that he's going to have a son and from this son will come a great nation, Abraham asked the question, how will I know that this is going to come true? Do you remember when somebody else asked that question? If you look at Luke's gospel, Luke chapter 1, the angel Gabriel comes to Zechariah. This is verse 8 of Luke chapter 1. It happened while he was performing his priestly service before God in the appointed order of his division. According to the custom of the priestly office, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and to burn incense. The whole multitude of the people were in prayer outside at the hour of incense offering. And an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing in the right in the altar of incense. Zechariah was troubled when he saw the angel, and fear gripped him. But the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zechariah, for your petition has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son. You'll give him the name John. And he goes on to tell what's going to happen with John. But in verse 18, Zechariah says to the angel, how will I know this for certain? For I'm an old man. My wife is advanced in years. Does that sound familiar? Verse 19, the angel answered and said to him, I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God. And I've been sent to speak to you and bring you this good news. And behold, you shall be silent and unable to speak until the day when these things take place, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their proper time. When Abraham asked the question, how will I know this is going to happen? He was seeing all that take place in a vision. And I don't know how much difference there is in a vision that comes from God and actually standing before Gabriel as Zechariah did. But for whatever reason, God didn't punish Abram when he asked that question, how will I know this will happen? God gave Abram a sign through some sacrifices that he offered. And in this case, I guess you could say it's a sign, but it's like a punishment as well, that Zechariah was made silent, couldn't speak until his son was born. Again, God knows all of our hearts. He knew Abram's heart. He knew Zechariah's heart. He knew the motivation for the question. He knew the nature of whatever doubts there might have been in the question itself. Sometimes I could use a current event to illustrate this. My car, when I would start it, my Highlander, it would run a little rough. Anybody else's car run a little rough in cold weather when you first start it? Yeah, a lot of cars do that. So no big deal. You just drive it a little bit, it warms up and it goes on, it's fine. My car ran rough. I didn't know it because there was something missing in the head gasket. And some coolant was leaking into one of the cylinders. And so, all you ladies, you can ask your husbands about this later. But when you would start it, it would run rough until that coolant was burnt off. And once it was burnt off, then it would run normal. But after a while, enough coolant had burnt off that the car overheated. It used to be called antifreeze because you put that stuff in your car to keep the block from freezing. Now it's called coolant because the primary thing it does is cool your engine. It did the same thing all the time, but the focus is a little different. Now, why did I tell you that? Well, if your engine runs a little rough just because it's cold, that's one thing. That's not a big deal. But if your engine runs a little rough because your head gasket's blown, that's a big deal. Same symptom, two different causes. Abram's doubt, if you will, Zechariah's doubt, if you will. Perhaps one man's doubt had a little deeper root than the other, and that's why things turned out the way they did. I don't know. I read these things and I wonder, I've got questions. I don't know that they'll ever be answered. But I think it's good to study to the extent that you have questions about things like these, because every single one of these relates to my life and to yours, and to the fact that we sometimes have doubts and we wonder about things. You may even wonder if you're right with God, if you're saved. I wonder if Abraham ever had any doubts when he was confronted with his lie about Sarah. And wow, okay, I almost took down the Pharaoh of Egypt. I almost took down Abimelech just because I wasn't courageous enough or faithful enough or confident enough to tell him that this woman's my wife. I don't know what he felt about that. That's said in Scripture, but I know whenever I cause issues, I wonder, oh man, what got into me? What did I do that for? And what's going to be the result? Anyway, this is just a kind of a study tonight of a few things in the life of Abraham to help me relate to him a little better as a human being. He had advantages we don't have. He had situations and circumstances that were difficult. We have advantages he didn't have. My goodness, we get to look back 2,000 years to the resurrection. Abraham would have had to look 2,000 years forward to the resurrection. So, let's be grateful. Thank God for recording us this history about Abraham, a man of faith, could be a friend of God. And perhaps you and I will also be noted as friends of God one of these days. We're going to stand and sing a song of encouragement. If there's anybody here that needs to respond in any way, we want to talk to you about any questions you've got about the Scriptures. If you need prayer, we want to pray with you. Let's stand and sing the song of encouragement and invitation.